Our next presenter is Nina Wallerstein. Many of you know Nina has been a leader in the field of community-based participatory research. She's a professor in the Department of Family and Community Medicine, Master of Health Program at the University of New Mexico, and the director for the Center for Participatory Research in the Office of Community Health. And for over 25 years, Nina has been involved in empowerment and popular education, participatory research with youth, women, tribes, and community-building efforts. She's also the one of the editors of Community-Based Participatory Research for Health, From Process to Outcomes, which is now in its second edition. Nina's talk is Research for Improved Health, a National Study of Community-University Partnerships.
Thank you so much. I was just at a talk right before this about social change and social movements and the kind of conflict and paradoxes between the science and sometimes what we're involved in social change. And those of us who started this study were trying to create a social movement for CBPR and at the same time try to improve the science of CBPR. And it's a real conflict. And actually, I will talk about, I'll just go right in. But it's not going. It's just the mouse?
The left?
That would be easy. No financial disclosure. So Ed Trickett did a beautiful editorial and article in American Journal of Public Health around what is CBPR. The editorial is about what is CBPR and what is our purpose. And he really raises this direct tension and paradox immediately. He talks about that many of us do CBPR for the utilitarian venture of creating higher retention, creating better recruitment, creating better face validity of instruments, et cetera, better cultural centeredness, and that's in itself important. But then those of us who are also in this field are in it for the long haul of creating the change of a worldview of how we do science, how is knowledge co-created with communities, how we promote social capacity, social movement of capacity building so that communities themselves can tackle the health disparities in partnership with us and really work not just to reduce them but to eliminate them. So we really are faced with this paradox in the science, and some of us do both all the time. So I thought it was really wonderful that he named this. We face tremendous reality in terms of complex community interventions, a lot of challenges for looking at context and how our context differences, I have worked for the last 25 years in American Indian communities, how those context differences are different from urban African American communities, and how that shapes our capacity to partner, our capacity to impact outcomes. It includes a lot of our confronting ourselves, what evidence are we using to showcase, to illustrate, to demand change? Is it only the evidence from the empirically supported literature that is all published, or is there strong evidence from community, the community healing practices, community programs, community systems that themselves create healthy communities, and how do we bring those evidences together? I hate that one is called evidence and one is called cultural norms and beliefs. I think they are both evidences, and how do we bring these evidences together is a challenge for us in this science. And of course, those of us who do community intensive interventions, multi-level, mixed methods, that's a challenge for how we do it and create designs that are accepted by our partners in the NIH world with multidisciplinary teams. I myself have become obsessed with translational science and the issue of taking something that's been produced as evidence in a particular, for me, a particular tribe, and how we then move that evidence-based practice intervention to a different tribal context. It's still a different context. What piece of it is generalizable within a part of a process or a specific or a process or function that is generalizable, but what might need to be contextualized? What's a specific form that has to change when you have an evidence-based public health intervention? It cannot just be plopped on the top of another community. So these are all challenges in the field. There's a million more. I just wanted to name a couple of them. But for us, what we started to do to try and look at the meta-science of CBPR, we were very lucky to get some initial funding from the National Institute of Minority Health and Health Disparities in 2006, my colleague Bonnie Duran and I, to begin to pull together what we started calling a think tank of researchers and community partners. Paul Cagle was in on the early rendition of it, to pull us together and say, what do we know around CBPR, what are the facilitators, what are the barriers, so that we can begin to create some national understanding of what might be similar across diverse populations, and of course, what are the many differences and variability that we all face. We then were able to apply for NARCH5 funding. Do people know what the NARCH5 mechanism is, or NARCH mechanism? It's called Native American Research Centers for Health, condensed to an acronym NARCH. It's been an Indian Health Service partnership with NIGMS, National Institute of General Medical Sciences, for the last 6, 7, 8 years, maybe. This was a NARCH5 endeavor. The key crux of the structure of NARCHs is that the PI is the tribe or tribal entity. So that our key PI partner here is the National Congress of American Indians Policy Research Center. They were fascinated by this study because they wanted to look at how tribal participatory research, or CBPR research in Indian country, might have lessons to share with other communities who are doing CBPR, and that they wanted to learn about how governance, when you have a tribal authority, a tribal leadership structure, how that impacts the ability to partner, as different from the many communities that all of us work in as well, that there's diffuse leadership structures. You might be working with NGOs or CBOs, you might be working with county commission or mayor's office. It's much more diffuse. So how that impacts the capacity to produce outcomes when you have these different leadership structures. So they were very far-sighted in wanting to partner in a project that could look across communities, CBPR projects across the nation. So we partnered ourselves, received wonderful support from NIDA, from NCRR, National Cancer Institute, OBSSR, with our other partners, NIGMS, which is part of the NARCH endeavor. So we are trying to cross-fertilize as much as we can the science of CBPR. Oops, going the wrong way. Our four aims are to describe the variability. As I said, I'm sure there's huge variability in this room. Describe the impact of governance, as I talked about why the tribes were interested in this in terms of CBPR processes and outcomes. We wanted to look at associations between group processes and outcomes, that we have all these partnering processes. How do we know what the variety of outcomes, what can we produce as outcomes as a field? How might it be added value of participation in terms of the capacity to actually reduce health disparities and come up with some promising practices? Multi-year study design, we've created a scientific community advisory committee. There, Hector Balcazar is now, there are other people in our larger effort. Oh, Barbara Israel's in the room. People who have been working with us. Vanessa Simons was a postdoc with us. Thank you for coming all. But where we're at was trying to create opportunity for community partners and academics to come together and provide support for together. There's so much experience out there. How can we kind of help use that experience? We were able to define a universe. We used the 2009 report database. At the time, there were 400 or so CBPR projects that we kicked out, training projects, RO3s, little pilot grants. We kicked out smaller grants, but we wanted longer grants. And we came up with a universe now of 318, 291 from the federal report, CDC grants, AHRQ, and NIH funded. We don't have foundation grants in this universe, plus the NARCH project. The goal was to do a series of up to 8 case studies and then an internet survey of these 300 and such projects. Those of you who are PIs in the room, you will be in 2 weeks or so getting a link, and hopefully you will be willing to send a response back on the internet survey. Part of our scientific community advisory committee. Part of the initial first step, and maybe some of you have seen this, we created a conceptual model trying to draw from some wonderful previous work by the Schultz et al. And others. But this looks kind of complicated, but it's really straightforward. You have all of the context that we all work with, whether it's historic trust context, or university capacity, community capacity, the national funding trends, the economic downturn, the cultural context. Within those contexts, we all are forming diverse partnerships. whether they're agency partnerships or community-driven partnerships or tribal-driven, or they have academic or university or other research institution. And there are three kinds of dynamics in those partnerships. There's the dynamic of who we are as individuals. Who we are as people matters. Not every researcher should be a CBPR researcher. Our relationship matters, our decision-making, how we have flexibility, what are those characteristics of our partnering dynamics. And the third, you guys raised early, what are the structures that we might have, memorandums of agreement, guidelines, principles, what are the structural ways we partner? All of that, if we're doing it well, will influence the research design and the intervention or the policy change or the epi study, whatever, it will influence what we do scientifically. It will not just be a add-on. It will influence it. And then we would hope to show their outcomes, intermediate system change outcomes, policy changes, sustained interventions, cultural renewal, as well as then those would lead to improved health and reduced health disparities. So that's the model that we're struggling to try and identify the constructs along the model to then assess in the country. There's been a lot of attention on partnering processes. Through this model, we're trying to draw attention to the context, the importance of, you know, is the intervention happening within a social movement? One of the case studies we're working with right now, there's a tremendous social movement of cultural renewal happening in these tribes, and there's an intervention funded by NIMHD. It's a life skills youth project, but it's not happening kind of independently. It's embedded with a wonderful social cultural movement. And that leads to then intermediate outcomes that are added value, different, greater capacities, not just at the community level and changes in power relations, but also at the university level. We hope to see changes in our own institutions in our capacity to do this partnering. We've developed a model, this universe of CBPR projects, as I said. Then we have our own code of ethics, our own protocols for publications, and many of you also have those in your own projects. We just published a literature review of existing measurement tools and constructs of instruments that have relationship to elements of the model. Maybe there's others we missed, but this has just been published. We have on the website an interactive model that links, you put the mouse over a particular part of the model and you get to measurement items or measurement tools. And we've developed a focus group guide for using the model for your own partnerships as a reflection evaluation instrument. 8 case studies were promised. We're now up to, we had funding cuts, so we're down to 6. Diverse ethnic minority, social identity cases, evidence of research commitment for a couple more years. It's an intensive couple-day visit, and then a lot of follow-up with focus groups, in-depth interviews, partnership questionnaire, and a lot of now producing of kind of results with them becoming our community partners for any data that will be distributed, authored, et cetera. The survey data collection is about to be launched. The PI will get an introduction letter. If you're a PI in this room, you'll actually get your $20 bill before you do a single thing. This is apparently the new survey methodology. You get your incentive first. And we followed by an email link. And then the community, that's called the Key Informant Survey, and then they'll be asking for community partners. That will then lead to a couple community partners. It's only up to three community partners, another academic partner. So the types of things that the PI will be asked are factual items. What's the governance structure? How much is resources shared? Are there MOUs? What are the roles? The community engagement surveys are for the 2 to academic and 2 to 3 community partners. Ask about self-perception of community context. These are just a couple examples. Community capacities, governance, group dynamics, and dialogue and outcomes. And I'm ending here. One of my doctoral students is very interested in the trust issues, so we're trying to develop a trust instrument or some sort of being able to look at different kinds of trust, how trust evolves over time. A lot of us are very interested in how in interventions, how culturally centered they are, so we developed a cultural centeredness scale to look at what extent the project fits within local beliefs, norms, practices. And as part of cultural centeredness, we're adding this a dimension of reciprocal learning. That's a piece of, it's not just them, it's us together. And I think that's it. That's the...
Thank you.